Welcome back to Case of the Sunday Scaries. I'm Elise, and today I have to start this episode with a bit of a confession. Of course, they say that to get over a problem, you have to be able to acknowledge it. Well, here it goes. Hi, my name is Elise, and I have coulrophobia, a fear of clowns. I don't know when this started, but I don't like clowns. I don't like mascots. Basically, anything that is dressed up in a fuzzy outfit or some creepy clown costume, it's just not for me. And they say admitting it might be the first step in getting over it. But I can tell you what, covering this case certainly did not help cure that fear whatsoever. It's so unsettling to cover a story where my seemingly irrational fear of clowns is given a reason to seem all too rational. When I mention a clown on a true crime podcast, I think most of us, our first thought is immediately of John Wayne Gacy, one of America's most prolific and horrible serial killers. But he is not the focus of our story today. Today, we're talking about the murder of a beautiful young mother named Marlene Warren, her son who sadly witnessed his mother's last moments, and the decades-long hunt to find Marlene's killer. This is the story of the killer clown. Marlene Warren was born in 1950 in a small town in Michigan. She was an incredible artist, and her mother, Shirley, recalled her daughter's true passion for painting. Now, call it a weird twist of fate or perhaps a dark premonition of what was to come, but Marlene often painted clowns, and this particular sad-faced clown was painted by Marlene when she was just a teenager. Marlene and her mother shared a love for clowns, which I cannot relate to, but Shirley, Marlene's mother, also had a room full of clown art and figurines in their home. And no offense, Shirley, I would be so freaked out to spend the night in that room. Can you imagine falling asleep and waking up in the middle of the night to see all these clown faces staring back at you? Whew, nope, ma'am, that is not for me. I'd be hightailing it out of that house real quick. Marlene married very young and went on to have two sons, John and Joseph. As many young marriages do, they grew apart, and their marriage came to an end quite quickly when Marlene was just 20 years old. 2 years later, in 1972, Marlene met and married a man named Michael Warren, who became the stepdad to her two young boys. The family relocated to Wellington, Florida, an affluent suburban area where the couple operated a car rental company. On September 26, 1988, when Marlene's oldest son, John, was just 22 years old, he failed to stop at an intersection and collided with another vehicle and sadly passed away at the scene. Grief of a child is... Well, I'm not a parent, but I have definitely heard and seen that a parent's grief for losing a child is something else. And Marlene was obviously mourning her son, and perhaps this became a polarizing time for the married couple, because it's said that Marlene and Michael's marriage really never recovered. It was not the same after John passed away. Her son Joseph said that his stepdad just wasn't around much after his brother passed. And Michael, again, was not home the morning of May 26, 1990. He was on his way to the racetrack with some of his buddies to place some bets. However, Joseph, who was 21 at the time, had recently broken his leg, and no matter how old you are, when you don't feel good, we always want a little bit of TLC for mom, am I right? So he was back at Marlene's home with some friends, and she was whipping up some breakfast for the bunch. When out of the window, Marlene sees a white Chrysler LeBaron pull into the driveway, and to her absolute surprise, out steps a clown. The outfit, the wig, the makeup, all of it. The clown leaves the car running and the door ajar and starts walking up the drive to the front door. If it's not Halloween, I sure as heck am not answering the door for anyone in a costume, much less a clown costume. I am dropping to the ground, pretending I'm not home, doing the dinosaur thing, like if I don't move, they can't see me, I can't see them thing, and calling 911 on the nearest phone. But context matters. And this particular clown was carrying two balloons and a flower arrangement of carnations and daisies. One balloon read, "You're the greatest," and the other balloon had a Snow White and Seven Dwarfs design on it. Perhaps an odd choice for a gift, but her son had just broken his leg. Maybe this is one of his friends or a courier service of some sort delivering a gift to cheer him up. So Marlene goes to the front door, takes the balloons and flowers, and exclaims, "Oh, how pretty!" But Marlene didn't even have time to catch what was happening as the clown wordlessly lifted their arm, positioned a gun right in Marlene's face, and pulled the trigger. Joseph heard the loud pop and went to see what was going on, and there was his mother lying on the floor, blood absolutely pooling in front of the front door. And from his vantage point, the open front door, he watched as the clown calmly, silently walked down the driveway, got back into the vehicle that, again, was still running and had the car door still open on the driver's side, and pulled away. Now, keep in mind that Joseph had broken his leg, so he's trying to hobble after to, like, see the vehicle, try to catch this person. But before the clown pulled away, they briefly looked at Joseph, and behind the face full of makeup, the orange clown wig and the red ball nose, Joseph saw the brown eyes of the person that had just shot his mother. When the ambulance arrived, they rushed Marlene to the hospital, but unfortunately her injuries were just too much. And 2 days later, when they had exhausted all possibilities for helping Marlene, life support was removed and 40-year-old Marlene Warren passed away. Joseph was quoted saying, "I was at a loss. I just felt my heart and soul get ripped out of my body. My mom was an angel. We were really best friends." Of course, the police needed to start their investigation right away. So they interviewed everyone that was at the scene that day. But how do these eyewitnesses really give any details? Was it a man? I don't know. Was it a woman? Maybe. It's pretty hard to discern someone's gender, age, weight, etc. when they're dressed head to toe in a baggy clown costume, have their face completely disguised with makeup and a wig and a red ball nose. That takes away every discerning attribute about someone's face. Joseph could only tell police that he believed the clown was around 6 foot and definitely had brown eyes and was definitely driving a white Chrysler LeBaron. With very little to go off, the police's next steps are to look into Marlene's life. Did she have any enemies? Anyone that would want her dead? But it turned out no one in Marlene's life could think of any reason that anyone would want to hurt Marlene. Everyone loved her. So it was time to dive into her inner circle. Sadly, most of the time, roughly 2 out of 5 female murder victims are killed by an intimate partner. So obviously, who are police going to be talking to first? Michael. The police start interviewing employees from their businesses. Yes, I said businesses, because at this point in their marriage, Marlene and her husband Michael had multiple businesses. They had that car rental place that they had first opened together. They had a secondhand auto dealership and multiple apartment buildings that they rented out. And some of these employees were real quick to tell police that Michael had been stepping out on Marlene. Apparently, Michael had been shacking up with a woman named Sheila. She worked for Michael at their auto business. Miss Sheila was a lady you never want to see in your driveway because she was responsible for repossessing vehicles when people couldn't make their payments. Apparently, the two were not very good at flying under the radar because not only were the coworkers singing like canaries, but when the police went to the residence where Sheila lived, wouldn't you know it? Every neighbor thought that Michael and Sheila were married because he was there so often. But when police sat Michael down and when police sat Sheila down and asked them about their relationship, no, we're just friends that see each other every day, hang out all the time, work together. And, you know, I'm a little younger than him. This isn't stereotypical. No, nothing's going on. We are just friends. No one believed them. But who would have the most to gain from Marlene's death? Again, the answer is Michael. A popular phrase that often comes up when people discuss spouses that kill each other is, "Haven't you heard of divorce?" But what that phrase doesn't take into consideration is the main motives for murder: lust, financial greed, or the pursuit of power. And I don't know if Marlene had a life insurance plan, but I do know that it was her name on most of the properties that they owned. If they had gotten divorced, Marlene would be entitled to half of everything they built together as a couple. And with her name being on the property deeds, maybe she would get even more. When Maureen passed away, 100% of their assets went straight to Michael. Maureen was a smart cookie, and she suspected Michael was having an affair. And it made her very nervous because she knew that many of the properties were in her name. And so she worried if she is worth more dead to Michael than alive. Allegedly, she told her son and her mother, "If something happens to me, Michael did it." Out of the 3 most common motives for murder, it's easy to see that Michael had 2 of them, right? Lust for his new side piece, Sheila, and with Maureen gone, there'd be no drag-out fights in divorce court for possession of their assets. He gets to start over with some money in his pockets and his young little hottie repo woman by his side. It's an open and shut case, right? Michael had motive, he had means. But what about opportunity? Remember where Michael was at that morning? He wasn't home. He was in a car with his friends off to make some bets on horse racing. They all corroborated his alibi. So Michael, who has the most motive, is out. Not to mention, Michael had basically been a father to Joseph since he was just 3 years old. And at the time of the murder, Joseph was 21. I find it really hard to believe that you could spend almost, 18 years of your life in close proximity or living with someone, and just a funky costume and some grease paint makeup would be all it would take for them to be unrecognizable to you. That just doesn't make sense to me. Michael could not have been the one to pull the trigger. So who and why did this happen? We have to go back to those motives. Michael was the only one who would have gained financially from Maureen's death. But what about Michael's side chick? I don't know much about Sheila's background, except that she had a young son at this time. I think he was about 3 years old. And it seems that she had escaped a potentially abusive marriage before meeting and working for Michael. She was known to be a tough cookie. And I guess you would have to be, I suppose, to be doing car repossessions, right? I personally worked for a credit card collection company for about 2 weeks, maybe, and knew right away I was not cut out for that job. Someone would tell me that they lost their job, they only had enough money to pay groceries for that week. Whatever they told me, I would feel so bad, and I would just end the call with, "I'm so sorry, hope things get better," and hang up the phone. Needless to say, myself and that company had a pretty mutual breakup after those 2 weeks. But imagine the cojones you have on you to go to someone's work or to their home and load up their vehicle onto a tow truck with them shouting and probably carrying on, threatening you, telling you that they won't be able to take their babies to school or get to work if you take away their car. And you just have to stand there and be like, "Sorry, tough luck." But just because you have a tough exterior doesn't mean that you're a cold-hearted killer. Unless, of course, you are. Deborah Offord came forward to the police with a tip. She had been working at a costume shop 2 nights before Maureen was murdered. It was closing time, and a woman came to the door pleading to see a clown costume. She asked the woman to come back tomorrow, but the woman pleaded with her that she needed something right now. The lady paid cash and left the store with a clown suit, orange clown wig, makeup, and a red clown nose. How did Deborah Offord describe the woman that came to the store that night? About 5'10", long, thick, straight, chocolate-colored hair, and big brown eyes. If you're watching this on YouTube, that pretty much accurately describes Miss Sheila. Police put this picture of Sheila in a lineup, and while Deborah did pick out Sheila in the lineup, she also said it could be another woman that was in that lineup. Not the confident, positive ID that the police were hoping for. 4 days after Maureen had passed away, police recovered an abandoned white Chrysler LeBaron in a parking lot 8 miles from the crime scene. You may notice that the car doesn't have a front license plate, so they couldn't really be sure that this was even the correct car. Joseph Wood had not been able to see a license plate as the vehicle backed out of his driveway. That's if he even remembered or had the wherewithal to remember it in his shock. But when the police searched the vehicle, they found orange synthetic fibers that resembled hair from a clown wig and several strands of brown human hair. It wasn't much, but it was enough circumstantial evidence to get a search warrant for the apartment of Sheila Keene. In her closet, police recovered orange fibers consistent with the ones that were found in the car. Sheila's hair was also compared under a microscope and found to be consistent with the hair that they found in the vehicle. However, at this time, DNA technology was still in its Pampers pull-ups phases of development, so they were not able to match the hairs genetically. Investigators had some pieces of evidence, but really it was just a few hairs that a good defense attorney could get ruled out pretty easily. They didn't feel they had enough to get them a conviction. And as for an alibi, Sheila had one. She said she was going from address to address in her car all morning looking for cars on her repo list. However, she just couldn't seem to remember the exact addresses of where she had gone that day, so police could never ask the homeowners and corroborate her alibi. However, the police were pretty ecstatic when they found out that the car, the getaway car, actually had a link to Michael. Apparently, one of his employees had stolen that vehicle from a competitor just weeks before the murder. So there is a connection to the getaway car, but police were also surprised to find out that Mr. Michael had some shady, shady business dealings. He was not conducting his businesses on the up and up at all. In fact, he was living up to every stereotype of a used car salesman persona in movies. He was charged with 43 counts of fraud for racketeering, insurance fraud, and odometer tampering, which made me think of the movie Matilda. Do you remember when her dad, who owns that used car dealership, you know, reverses the mileage in all the cars before he sells them to get a higher price? Like, that's who Michael is. And while Michael may not have killed his wife, he's certainly showing his ass as an untrustworthy, unloyal fraudster, one that was going to serve about 3 years in prison. But what about Sheila? The investigators felt that they knew it was her. It had to be her. She was the only one besides Michael that had any motive to hurt Maureen. But they just didn't have enough concrete evidence to take to a grand jury for an indictment. And the case went cold for years, for 27 years to be exact. It seemed that the clown had gotten away with murder. But DNA evidence had come a long way in that 27 years, and a cold case unit finally retested the hairs in evidence, and surprise, surprise, the hairs in the getaway vehicle were a perfect DNA match to Sheila Keene. And 27 years later, they had enough to finally get an arrest warrant for Sheila. But can you imagine the detective's surprise when they go to get, you know, they're arresting Sheila. Finally, we're getting our girl. They pull up at her current address in Tennessee, and who do they see? None other than Mr. Michael Keene himself. Because apparently when Michael got out of prison, the two picked up their little romance right where they left off. And remember, they swore up and down they were not romantically involved during the time before or during Maureen's murder. But what do you know? Those two had actually gotten married in 2002 and moved to Tennessee to start a new life together. Maybe like they always planned. Allegedly. Michael and Sheila, or should I say Debbie? Because not suspiciously at all, Sheila had colored her hair platinum blonde and introduced herself as Debbie as soon as they moved to Tennessee. And the two of them started up a little burger joint called Purple Cow. Strange name. Employees at that restaurant had something really quite interesting to say about their tough, even mildly aggressive at times, boss, Sheila, Debbie, whatever you want to call her. They were telling police that there was rumors that their boss had killed her husband's previous wife, but no one could pinpoint how or when the rumor really got started. One of the employees even turned in a picture of Sheila dressed up as a clown for their work Halloween party. And knowing what we know now, this picture is horrifying. Sheila, now Sheila Keene-Warren, was finally arrested on September 26, 2017. But the hands of justice move very, very slow because she would not go to trial right away. There was tons of delays and rescheduling, and then COVID happened. So Sheila sat in prison until 2023. And at first, the prosecution really wanted to go for the death penalty. But to prove a death penalty case, you need what prosecutors would refer to as an airtight case. And they just didn't have that. Because of how many years had passed, evidence had been moved, and there was chain of custody issues with evidence. And some of the witnesses had even passed away since the murder. So they were rightfully concerned they were not going to get a conviction for first-degree murder either. So on April 25th, 2023, just 2 weeks before Sheila's trial was finally set to begin, a plea deal was reached. Sheila Keene-Warren stood up in court in her navy jumpsuit and pled guilty to the second-degree murder of Maureen Warren and was sentenced to 12 years in prison. Which doesn't sound like much, but be ready to throw your phone or your computer, whatever you're watching or listening this on, across the room in frustration. Because Sheila's 12 years started at the time of her arrest, because she had spent all that time in jail. So from the time she was arrested to the time that she made that plea, it all counted as credit towards her sentence. So Miss Sheila Keene-Warren will be released from prison sometime next year. She gets to go back to her little life of retired bliss with her husband, the husband of the woman that she murdered next year. Now, Michael says that no, she's absolutely innocent. She just made this plea to get out of jail and come home to him. And oh, by the way, he's also completely innocent as well. His theory was someone had to be mad at him or Maureen because of the type of businesses that they had. Maybe someone targeted their home after getting their car repossessed. And to that, I just say, give me a break, Michael. Maureen, at the age of 40, was assassinated. She was gunned down in her own home in front of her son, and the people responsible for it are you, Michael, and Sheila. Yeah, I said Michael too, because you cannot convince me that this reportedly charming, charismatic older man did not concoct this plan with a 27-year-old Sheila. He creates a rock-solid alibi for himself that morning, and she goes to the house as soon as he leaves in a disguise and kills Sheila. They get the properties, Sheila gets promoted from mistress to wife, and they live happily ever after. If Michael was not involved in some way, then why a clown costume? Maureen grew up sharing a love for clowns with her mother, even painting them. Who else would know Maureen well enough to put that particular sadistic spin of having the killer show up in a clown costume? You're going to tell me that that was just coincidence? Happenstance? Get real. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like Michael will ever be held responsible for allegedly conspiring with Sheila to murder his wife. And I hope those two have a miserable rest of their lives together and stub their toe every single morning. But if you're watching this in Tennessee, you might want to take a very good look at this face. This is a somewhat recent picture of Sheila in prison. Because next year, when you are out trick-or-treating or dressing up for a Halloween party, you might want to watch out for a clown. It could just be Sheila Keen Warren in her favorite disguise. I want to leave you with these words from Joseph from an interview after Sheila's conviction. When asked if you could speak to her today, what would you want to say to your mother? Joseph replied, "Wow, what could I say to my mother? Thank you for showing me how to love and be peaceful, and thank you for being in my life." Maureen Warren was a loving mother and friend who was taken from this world way too early by a person or persons who put their own desires over the life of another. Thank you for joining me for the case of Maureen Warren and the killer clown. That's all for me today. So please like, follow, subscribe, send to a friend, do all of the things. It really does help this channel grow. And let me know what you guys think in the comments. Did Sheila act alone or was Michael a co-conspirator? I'll be back next week with an all-new case. But as always, until then.